Testing, 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 testing. And
We ready.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. You're here with your host, Mark Thompson, aka Creative Logic, and we are tuning in to the BIPOC Access Podcast. So today we have a very special guest with us. We're going to be welcoming Tiffany Cameron to the BIPOC Access Podcast. Tiffany, how are you today?
I'm doing great. It's a pleasure to be here. The weather is beautiful outside. Cambridge is a beautiful city, and it's a pleasure to be on your show.
Well, we appreciate you coming down here today, taking the time to connect with us. Give a little bit for people who are listening, a little background on who Tiffany Cameron is in terms of a background on your career and accomplishments.
So I started playing football when I was 9 years old. Actually, I should say a little bit earlier than that. I run around with the boys in elementary school, and they would be like, "Tiff, really good. Why don't you consider playing soccer, joining a league?" I was like, "I don't know, maybe." At the time, I actually really loved hockey. And, you know, growing up in Canada, it's all about hockey. So I had a conversation with my mom one day, and I said, "I'd love to join a hockey league." And she's like, "Tiffany, it's way too expensive. Can you find something else?" And I knew I also loved soccer as well, too. So it's interesting to say that soccer actually was not my number one pick as a sport. It was hockey, but then, you know, I think things turned out the way they did for a reason. And my mom, he set me up with soccer. I started off with North Mississauga for a couple years, and then played for Aaron Mills as well, too. And that was a cool experience. I got a lot of exposure through Aaron Mills. We went different tournaments. We traveled, I remember, in Sweden for the Gothia Cup. That was a really cool experience. And I got some looks from Team Ontario, and, you know, there's a whole process getting into that program. And eventually I played for Canada. You know, it was Team Ontario, then NTC, and then the national team. And I went to my first under-17 World Cup with Canada, and that was 2008. We went to New Zealand, which is really cool. And the irony of that is, you know, this upcoming World Cup is in Australia and in New Zealand. So we'll talk about that later. But yeah, from there, I went to my first U-17 World Cup. We made it all the way to the quarterfinals. Germany beat us 3-1, unfortunately. I had an assist that game, so I was proud of that. And after that, I went to Ohio State. And I spent 4 years there, and I left there as the leading goal scorer. And I also had the all-time season stats. Like, I had the best in history. So. Yeah, we need the siren for that. One more time. Yeah. So I was really happy to leave the program, you know, to leave a mark in the program. And, you know, they've been great to me. Anytime I'm during off season, I sometimes will go up there and I'll train, and they're amazing, you know. And from then on, I started my professional career. My first team ever that I played for was Seattle Reign FC. And, you know, I had quite the experience there. We weren't doing really, really well, unfortunately. And there was a time where my coach, he sat me down. I had a really, really good training session, and she said, "If we need to talk." And I was like, "Oof, this could go well, or this could maybe not go so well." And she said, "You know, there's a lot going on with the program. We need to make some changes." It's like, "Tiff, you have a lot of talent, but right now we need to bring in someone with experience because we're losing. And that means that my job could possibly be on the line as well, too. And I have to make these changes." But she said, "You know, Tiff, I recommend you going to play overseas and coming back to the NWSL when you're ready, when you're more experienced, and we'd love to have you back." And I said, I was really heartbroken, but, you know, I was really young, I was 21, and I'm like, well, they need a change, and I'm unfortunately going to have to be that change. So I left, and then actually Kansas City, FC Kansas City, they picked me up. They were number one in the league, so that was like an honor to even be on that roster in the first place, and the training sessions were like fantastic. I remember at the time I was playing with Desiree Scott and Lauren Sesselman as well too. They were amazing. And then after that, I went overseas, played my first, I had my first contract overseas in Germany, and that was for Hoffenheim. They're a great club. It was just tough though, because there weren't a lot of English speaking players. So I had, we'll get back into that as well too. Yeah, and then after that, I played for a couple other teams in Germany. I've played in Sweden, I've played in Norway, I've played in Cyprus for a Poland ladies. It was for Champions League, my first time playing Champions League. Yeah, and Hungary as well too. And I'll be revealing where I'll be next, probably by tomorrow, maybe. Oh.
Well, we definitely appreciate you giving everyone a little bit of that background on you. And as well, I know a big part of your, that you talk about, especially a part of your journey, is vitiligo as well. And I wanted to speak a little bit about that, in terms of your journey, first discovering, and also speaking about the importance of seeing more representation in sports as well, and just representation in general.
Yeah, so it actually started off with one dot on my, it was like, man, what is this? And this was back in 2017. And at the time, I was going through a lot of stress. Like, I was going through bad of injuries. And, you know, I had a boyfriend at the time. He was kind of giving me a headache as well, too. You know how it goes. Long distance isn't easy. And I was like, what is this? And I spoke to my mom about it. And we decided to go to a dermatologist to look further into things. And we had a feeling what it was, but we weren't 100% sure. And yeah, we spoke to a dermatologist. We went to two different ones. One was in Germany. I went on my own. And then another when I went back to Canada, and they both confirmed it's vitiligo. And they were like, you know, it has a mind of its own. They asked if it was hereditary. And I said, no, I don't have anyone in my family with this. And they said it could be stress related. It could be where maybe I touched something and it triggered it, like maybe a toxin or something. I don't have no idea. But it was one of those things where I'm like, huh. I took so much pride in my black skin, and I had to literally fall in love with a new version of myself. So every day I would look into the mirror and I'd be like, okay, there's a new patch, you know, all right, can I deal with this? And I have this rule from when it started until now, where in the morning I look at myself and I have to be comfortable with what I'm looking at before I leave my house. So even if there's like, say, a new patch, it's like, all right, well, we got to embrace this patch. We don't really like where it is right now. But, you know, I think it's so important that, you know, in life, things change and you have to be able to adapt to those changes. And, you know, this is something that hasn't affected my overall health. You know, I'm really blessed to be able to play soccer and other things as well, too. And so I just told myself, maybe this is an opportunity for me to put myself out there a little bit more. And you know, there's Winnie Harlow. She's literally one of my idols. She is such a beautiful woman, and she has vitiligo as well too, and she's learned to embrace it. She's on like Vogue magazine and everything. She's living her best life. And it's like, I look at a woman like that and how powerful she is, and I say to myself, well, I can do that too. You know, I can be the athlete version of Winnie Harlow. So yeah, it's kind of, I think this has been a new opportunity for me to embrace my new look and fall in love with my new self, you know. And everyone has accepted me. They know who I am as a person. And, you know, it's just my outer appearance has changed a little bit, but I still look at myself as a beautiful woman.
And I wanted to come back to that a little bit later on, just from the fact that, like, you really touched on a lot about how your self-acceptance and who you are is way more based upon more than how you physically look outside, and having that self-love for yourself and having that appreciation for who you truly are helps you to face different obstacles and obstructions that may come across in life. So one of the things that I wanted to have you talk a bit about as well is now that you're kind of come to this point, especially within your soccer career and your professional playing career, what was it that kind of gave you that early passion? So as you had said, you had had the hockey situation there, wanting to play hockey. But at what moment, now that you're playing soccer, were you like, I actually do have a passion for this, and this is something that I'm going to dedicate myself to and put the consistency in for?
I think when I started to travel with Aaron Mills, I was like, this is really fun. I could use my talent and it could take me to many places in the world. And I remember specifically, actually, I was really young. I was 14 at the time. And there was a time where I actually wanted to quit football because I wanted to be a regular kid. And I spoke to my mom about it. We were going to leave to go to the soccer center. It was early in the morning. It was like 5:30 in the morning. I'm like, I don't want to wake up early in the morning anymore. You know, I just want to do what my friends are doing. And he was like, Tiffany, you have so much talent and you work so hard. Why would you want to throw it away now? And she's like, of course, you can also get a scholarship. It's school is very expensive. You know, it would help me. It would help you. Like, stick with it. You're so close. Why would you throw this all away? And we knew that the World Cup was coming up as well, too. And I sat there and I was, she's right, actually. Why do I want to be average? You know, and that was a turning point for me. And I thank my mom. She's literally my idol because she's been there for me since day one. And she pushes my buttons, but she knows when to push them. And that was the moment where I'm like, you know what? My talent can take me places, you know, whether it's representing my country, whether it's, you know, getting a full-time scholarship. And I did that at Ohio State, you know, or even playing professionally. So I'm happy that that was the moment where I'm like, I can take things to the next level and really build. And I didn't know 100% that I wanted to go pro until I played at Ohio State. So that was quite the process. And I sat down with Coach Lori Walker and he was like, Tiff, you know, you could do something with yourself. You're a very talented player and there's not a lot of players with like at your caliber or with your character and your personality that come to this program. And she's like, I think you should go for it. I said, yeah, let's do it.
And when you were kind of going into that period of after you had stopped playing at Ohio State, what made you kind of continue and see what drove you to kind of want to continue being a part of the game? And did you find that there was ever a time where you started to want to play a different role within the game? Like as opposed to being in a player, being a coach or being a trainer, or what was kind of like the thought process that went through your mind at that point?
Oh, I mean, I think that, I actually like that question. There's like different angles like to answer that. We'll go with part A first. Ask the part A again, and then I'll go.
So kind of getting an idea of what continued to drive you after like that Ohio State point. And there's a lot of athletes where after they finish college, they start to move away from trying to play and they may go into training or they may go into a variety of other things that are still attached to the sport. But essentially, like that's kind of the end to that part of their journey. Whereas by sticking with it, you can obviously see where you've come to today. So how has that kind of like, what drove you at that point to stay consistent, stay driven, to realize the dream now?
I think when I decided that I wanted to leave the program as all-time leading goal scorer, I set goals. And I remember I created like a vision board, like just me as like a freshman and sophomore, junior, you know, senior, and just me growing. And I sat down with my coach and we spoke about what I need to do to break this record. And, you know, it involved me going in maybe 30 minutes before trainings and working on my finishing and stuff. And, you know, I was really dedicated. And when I walked away and I was able to achieve that, because I think at the time I had to score like 21 goals or 20 goals. It was like a ridiculous amount. And I think the record before that for just an in-season, just one season, was 13 in one season. So I had to score 20. And I just realized how powerful my mind was. and that if I literally say I'm going to do something, I will set my goals and I will work every day towards them. And not a lot of people can be disciplined like that. And that was a turning point for me as well, where I was like, I can really do something with my career if I like strive towards that. So if that answers your question, that was the time where I'm like, you know what, I can play professionally. I have the mindset and I'm driven enough to survive in the professional world.
And that definitely answers my question. And it actually leads a bit into my next question, which is, speaking on that journey, there's obviously moments that might come up which are almost like setbacks or things that could be that moment where you say, like, maybe this isn't for me. But taking that into account, can you talk to us about some specific setbacks that you encountered and kind of like, what were the strategies, or in reality, what did you go about doing to overcome them?
I remember in Germany, so it was my second season in Germany. And right before preseason, I think I was training with one of my really good friends, Jerome Baker. He's great. He actually has a whole academy, try football. He's amazing. And I actually ended up injuring myself while I was just shooting practice, and I felt something pop. I'm like, oof. I didn't know what that was all about. And this was literally maybe a couple weeks before I was supposed to report this season. And I had to get an MRI done, and turned out that I partially tore my rectus femoris. And I mean, that's this big muscle in your quad. And I told my club about it, and I gave them MRI and stuff and what I need to do to get back as soon as possible. And they looked at it and they kind of rushed the process a little bit because they wanted me on the field as much as possible. And I came back too soon. And I felt like something was off. And I remember I was like, we had a possession drill going on, and I was like passed it. It didn't feel right. I told my coach, I said, look, like I something feels off. Like I feel like I should step out of training. Doesn't feel right. And she's like, Tiff, no. Like you're supposed to feel a little bit uncomfortable. You're just coming back from an injury. It's normal. So the next morning we had a shooting session. Popped it right again. It was too soon. And that was the moment where I told myself, I will never, ever, ever tell someone how I'm, like, I will never follow like what someone else is trying to tell me how I'm supposed to feel. I'm going to go based off of what my body is telling me. My body is my temple. And when something's off, then I need to trust that. And that was the moment where I was like, I need to make sure I protect myself from now on, because sometimes clubs will, of course, it's about money. They're paying money to get a foreigner in, and they want them to play as soon as possible and stuff. And, you know, they might not exactly think about what exactly the player is going through. And yeah, that was a moment for me where I'm like, I'm not going to put myself in that situation again. And it's interesting because I don't know what happened that year, but I was getting injury after injury. And then I realized that it was about my strength training. I was lacking in some areas, and that's why I was constantly getting injured. And so I remember I partially tore my meniscus, and I was playing through it. I didn't know at the time. My knee was just swelling up, and what's going on? And then I think the club knew something was up, but they're like, well, she had this injury before, so we're going to just, like, he can play, so whatever. By the end of the season, they're like, oh, maybe she get an MRI. They knew. But got an MRI. And then it turns out that, so I had a talk with a doc, and he was like, well, you're going to need surgery. I said, what? And I start crying immediately, because I've never in my entire career had a knee injury before. And I knew that those are tough to get back from. And he said, well, if you want, you can continue playing, but your career is not going to last you very long. So he said he recommends a surgery. And that was also a turning point for me, because later on that year, I know that Team Jamaica, they were interested in me as well too. So eventually I went to Sweden, and I did do my rehab and stuff, so I bounced back. But I still, that year was the worst year I think for me possibly, because I just kept getting injury after injury, so with my knee. And then after that, I'm like, okay, I need a proper strength plan. So when I went to go play for Jamaica in 2019, Coach Busby, after they qualified for the World Cup, it was 2018 actually. Yeah, Coach Busby emailed me and was like, "Hey Tiff, I know we spoke a couple years ago about you coming to play for Jamaica. You weren't ready, but you know we're going to a World Cup now. Will you be ready? And would you be interested?" And I said, "Of course, yes, but I'm just dealing with this knee thing. I would love to talk to the strength and conditioning coach. I need to get a plan, a solid workout plan, gym plan for myself." And I spoke to his name is Jason Henry. He's amazing, and also Will. They helped me bounce back, and I think from that point on, I didn't get injured until maybe like 3-4 years later. I had no issues at all with anything. And I just kind of realized how important it is to take care of your body off the field as well too, and strength workouts and catering to myself. So it was a tough time for me in Germany specifically, because that's when I got vitiligo. That's when I got a whole like trend of injuries. So, you know, I think it was great having a support system as well too, on and off the field. My family, my friends were there, and then also the strength and conditioning coach from Jamaica. Both of them were great.
One of the questions I was going to ask you next, which was your opinion on the importance of mental health and self-belief in achieving your success. And I want you to answer that, but then I also want you to speak to how you feel that you developed those skills, you developed that ability. Like, was it family members, is it experiences that you've been through? Like, what is it that fueled you to have that perspective, mindset?
I think mental health is the most important thing in football. You could have a player that's amazing, has amazing qualities, but when it gets hard, how is a player going to stand up? And I mean, you could fall down, but how are you going to get back up and have that, you know, tenacity? And I think the biggest thing is to realize that everyone has their weaknesses, and you know, I'm not strong all the time. And I think it's important when I find that I'm in my weak moments that I reach out to like my family, my friends. They've been great I've been overseas, and even while I'm here as well too. And a sports psychologist, like I've spoken to some sports psychologists as well, involved with Team Jamaica and Team Canada and stuff, because you can't do it alone. You really can't. There's just so many things that you have to kind of go through, especially for me playing overseas, playing as a Black athlete. That is a whole other can of worms, you know. Playing in Europe especially. So, I have some stories about that as well too, where I've had to sometimes bite my tongue and just say to myself, "Oh, I'll pray for that individual," because they have no idea, like, what they said, what they did. They're just literally ignorant to a lot of things, you know. So I think I have to credit my sports psychologist that I've worked with throughout, and also my family, my friends. My mom has been great. You know, I've always, if I go through something, I always reach out to her, and she's always there to give some good advice and be comforting. Oh.
And do you feel comfortable sharing one of those stories with us, especially whenever I hear Europe, and especially given our audience just...
Ooh, I got some stories for you, bud. Oh, I don't know where to start. Okay. Oh, there's one. There's one that was really, it was sad. So I was playing for Borussia Mönchengladbach in Germany.
You say that one more time.
Borussia Mönchengladbach. Right. I was playing for them in Germany. It was the top league in Germany. And we were about to play, I think it was Bayern Munich. And it was a home game. And you know how sometimes you have little kids that you walk out or whatever. So there was like a special needs, and we had to walk them out. And one of the girls was like, didn't want to hold my hand. And then she was saying in German, like, "She's Black. I don't hold a Black girl's hand." And I could understand, because I picked up quite a bit of German. And like, I was really sad. And he like kind of ran away. And then some people didn't know what was going on. And then there was another girl who heard, and she held my hand. And that was, and of course, he was white. And it was a really powerful moment, because the other one who ran away saw that and was, oh, so I don't need to be afraid. And she came back and she held my hand and they both held me. And they were young. And I was like, wow. It broke my heart, but it also really showed that, you know, not everyone is raised a certain way and you have to kind of take it for what it is. But we walked out onto the field and then my teammates, some of them knew what happened. They're like, we're so angry. We're so sorry for you, Tiff. Like, we're here for you. You know, we'll help you throughout the game, you know, try and focus. Like, they were really supportive. And there's a lady who was in charge of the group and she brought that young girl over to me and they both apologized. And I said, you know, it's okay. That, I mean, it wasn't okay, but I understood that, you know, a special needs child and maybe her upbringing did not show that it's okay to love Black people. But I think it was a really powerful moment that at the end of the day, we were all united afterwards. And I had to play the game. I had to just swallow my pride and everything and be like, you know what, these things happen. Not everyone is aware of, you know, what's right and what's wrong. That's usually a parent's responsibility to make sure their child knows what's going on in terms of that and accepting everyone. So that was deep for me. And I just had to be strong. And, you know, there's other situations that I've been through in Europe. There was one time I was just walking to the bus stop and some German man was like, warum bist du schwarz? That means, why are you Black? And I just carried on. I'm like, you know what? I don't even need to answer that. You know, there's certain random things. He's like, I don't have time for this. But it happens a lot. Like, even when I was in Hungary, there's certain things that happened. And some people are just very ignorant. They have no idea. Like, oh, well, you're actually kind of being a little bit racist there, you know? But yeah, so that's just maybe two stories that I have more, but we can't be on here talking about all that for all this time, you know? We need some positive.
But to be honest, I really appreciate you sharing that, especially about the two young people, because, well, for me personally, I feel like that speaks more to their upbringing than to the actual youth themselves. It's kind of like you can tell that that's been indoctrinated or taught to them. So just having that moment of even, I feel like they may have had that realization that whoever it is that tried to taught me, teach this to me, they're wrong. And starting to break down those stereotypes, stigmas, and those misconceptions that are being essentially taught to them by the people that they trust, like, it starts to break down the obstacles for people to connect in the real world. One of the questions that I also wanted to speak to you, we've touched on it a little bit here, that you're going to be playing in the World Cup. But can you talk to us a bit about that as well? So, like, what was it like when you first found out, like, the moment that you were going to be in the World Cup?
So it happened twice, right? So this will be my second World Cup playing for Jamaica. In 2019, I went to my first Women's World Cup with them. And I remember in that moment, there was a whole thing about me getting cleared. Because remember, when you change from nationalities, I was playing for Canada before, so I had to write a letter to FIFA as to why I wanted to swap. And then also I had to, like, get my citizenship, my passport, all those things. But the headache was the FIFA, getting accepted by FIFA, you know, and that was not until the really last minute. So when I found out that finally my papers cleared and everything, I started crying. I was crying so, and I screamed like, yeah, like, I did it, you know. And it was so special to me because, of course, I went to one World Cup with Team Canada, and it was on the youth level. But to go to my first, like, Women's World Cup and play for Jamaica, you know, both of my parents were born in Jamaica. That was so special to me. And I was so happy that I got cleared. And, you know, FIFA said, gave me the okay. But that moment was amazing. And even finding out this year that I made the team, I got teary-eyed as well, too. I cried a little bit, but I think the first time I cried more. But it's amazing. And I'm 31 years old right now. And, you know, as I get older, I have to start, like, thinking about the next steps and stuff. So I'm being realistic to myself and saying, you know, this will probably be my last World Cup, and to be able to make the team and, like, be an asset to Jamaica another World Cup is the most special thing to me ever. And I'm honored.
And for anyone out there that's
not familiar with the World Cup, what was the World Cup for you when you were younger? Can you remember like your first World Cup experience watching the TV or listening to radio following the World Cup?
I thought it was really cool. I was like, wow, I want to be a star. Like, and just looking at the older players as well. You know, Christine Sinclair was also another player that I really, really looked up to. She is probably the most humble player that I've ever played with and just watched. She's incredible. Great vision, great technical ability, natural goal scorer. And even just watching her on the screen, I'm like, I want to do what she's doing one day. This looks so cool, you know? And I heard how the commentators, they would speak about her. And I'm like, I want to be respected like that one day. So it was always really cool watching her play. And also Marta, that used to be one of my favorite players. She's amazing. She's so fun to watch. And that was like a little bit of my motivation as well, too, watching those women do what they love, represent their countries and shine. So.
And it was really good for you to kind of talk about those people that you had looked up to coming up as an athlete. And it's kind of funny how as time goes on, as you probably know, there's many little younger people who are now looking up to you and looking at your story and looking at your journey to try and model how they're going to move forward. So I wanted to ask you, what's a message that you would give to an aspiring athlete or even to an aspiring individual who may face similar challenges you faced during your journey in your career?
I would say, don't be afraid to talk about how you're feeling, because, you know, I think in life we go through a lot of different things, situations and stuff, and I think it's important to be real with yourself. You know, if you wake up and you're not motivated, it happens sometimes. You know, it's like, how can you find that extra bit of motivation? And I think remembering why you play, that's so people have so many different reasons. Some play because it relieves their stress, some play because it brings them joy. Some play because they love the spotlight. There's so many different things, but never forget why you play. Because even for me, I'll always go back to, say, that moment when I was 14 and I wanted to quit. And my mom, like, she was just there to support me and tell me all the reasons why I shouldn't give up. Anytime I feel like quitting, I think about that moment. And that's, like, my motivation, because I remember how I was as a child and how sometimes I wanted to fit in with everyone else, do what they're doing. And it's just like, no. I was not born to be an average individual. I was born to shine on the field and also off the field, because I think I do have a powerful voice and you know, sometimes I'm a motivational speaker. You know, I'm even coaching. I have my B license now as well, too. And it's something that I'm definitely going to be getting into after football. So I just think that, you know, being a young girl, just they should always remind themselves why they play and just work hard for everything, and don't let anyone tell you that you can't do something. As long as you believe in your heart that you're good enough, you'll always be good enough.
That's great words and great words to live by. I wanted you to touch a little bit too on the impact that you want to have on the sports community and on society as a whole after you're done playing.
So my plan is to coach. It's either I'm going to coach probably in America for maybe a D1 school, or I might stay here in Canada and coach. You know, maybe I might get involved with Team Canada, or maybe I might get involved with Team Jamaica. We'll see where the opportunity lies. But I really want to also be a mentor to athletes, because I've been through so many different experiences. Like, I've gone through, you know, my injuries. I've gone through being a consistent starter. I've been one of those players coming off the bench. I've been one of those players who've been benched. You know, I've been one of those players just coming back from injuries, like I said before. And there's so many different things that I've gone through that I want any player that I'm coaching, I want them to know, I understand. I understand your struggle. I've been there. These are the tools that I had to use growing up to get past these things. So I just would want to help kids and give them hope. That's my biggest thing, not just kids, adults as well too. And just share my experiences and be able to motivate them.
We appreciate that. And where can people stay in contact with you, keep updates, especially as you're going through your World Cup journey?
So I'm really, really active on Instagram. My Instagram account is Tiffany_Cameron11, very basic. So I like to always post stories and, you know, I post things on my profile as well too. They'll always know what I'm up to. I don't usually go more than a day without posting. Sometimes I do need my day or two if I'm going through some things, you know. Like I said, mental health is really important. If I need a break from social media, I'll step off it for a little bit, but not too long. Because sometimes my fans are like, Tiff, like, what's up? Like, because they're just like, this is odd. She hasn't been posting for a day or two or 3 days. So sometimes you have to step away, but that's definitely my most active social media platform. I'm also on Twitter as well too, T_Cameron11. Those are the two platforms that they can find me. Also on YouTube, I have a whole bunch of videos, like my rap videos and also of my journey throughout my career. I've posted some things. I remember there's a video from Jerusalem when I was just touring Jerusalem. It was really cool. So they can check me out through there, through that channel.
We're definitely going to have you back on BIPOC Access to talk more about the music and maybe play one of your new records when it comes out. Well, I wanted to express gratitude to you for taking the time to come down here and sit down with us and talk a little bit about your journey with us at BIPOC Access. Good luck at the World Cup.
Thank you very much.
And it's an amazing thing that you're doing, representing for people and people who look like you. And please continue to strive for excellence and continue to follow your dreams and to make
perfect. Thank you for having me. Sad, honestly. We gotta get a photo too.